Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like Mohicans and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all seeking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride vans and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They tour around the world, then they going no place. My KRS One moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I blaze them too. Ooh, deja vu. You seen this all before me, slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs. Cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot. Me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see by the dawn early? Through the perilous fire.
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4. I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring, ring with the harmony. Oh, let us rejoice and rise high. Loud as the orchestra.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Are you the parent of a troubled teen, or you just want to have a closer relationship with your child? If so, sign up for our free webinar called 5 Easy Tips to Effective Communication with Your Teen right now, hosted by teen expert Relief Henry. Log on to successfulteenparenting.com/webinar.
Walking down the street now is a dangerous thing. There are drug dealers, crack houses, gang members, and crackheads. People fighting, cursing, and killing too. So much chaos, we don't know what to do. But if people only knew that they are hurting little children, if they could only see what our community could be. When in consultation, 1, stay calm. 2, try to say something positive. 3, tell the person what's on your mind. 4, ask if the person understands. 5, thank the person for listening if you can. Come on, y'all, let's be an example. It has to start somewhere. How about now? For more information on ways to prevent violent crimes, contact Totally Positive Productions at 773-488-9553.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Clépas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice who brings an entirely new level of heat to romance. With her soon-to-be-released paranormal novel, Ephraim is giving us a brand new insight into this genre. Find her books on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network, 347-838-9825. I'm just getting adjusted right now. Waiting on my producer to come in so I can get everything squared away. The lines are blowing up right now, so people are holding on. Please give me a chance to get to you in a minute. We're going to be dealing with topics as what's going on today. Talk to me Tuesday. Let me know what's happening. Gay bashing in D.C. A bunch of teens beat a gay couple up in D.C. Also, a military sub was set on fire because a man was wanted to get out the war. What's going on with Syria? Talk about stuff like that. Chicago Teachers Union come to an agreement. Sherman Hemsley passing away. And I want to take off with the conversation I left off yesterday with Dana is about polarizing. Is Barack Obama making the country polarizing by being a black president, or white people or white Americans making America polarizing because we have a black president? But until I get things straightened up, let me be right back in about 4 minutes.
This was crazy, man. It's like my life story right here.
For hours as I play guitar, yo, sing my song up on the radio while she was in her car, yo. Her interest would grow. She came to my show. She knew every note, each line that I wrote. Oh, oh, oh. Suddenly she was in love. In time I met this little girl, was attracted to her ways, yo. What took years for some couples to build for us is just a day, yo. So as time went on, I wrote her more songs, not knowing that songs would soon come along. To see I was not Superman, no. I may have a gift for these words, but I'm no more than a man. So my song's about joy, my song's about pain. She loved them the same, but to me she changed. Oh, holding on got so hard. I would be up in the studio. Some nights she slept alone. Oh, she'd get mad filled with jealousy. Those girls that scream out my name.
up if I've been lost on too many times.
Show myself alone,
baby.
Unfortunately, I'm all alone.
Out from
my dreams,
baby. And beans don't burn on the grill. Took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill. Now we're up in the big leagues and we're getting our turn at bat. And as long as we love, it's you and me, baby, and there ain't nothing wrong with that, 'cause we're moving on up to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. Well, I'm moving on up. We finally got a piece of the pie. We're moving on up to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. One day I was gonna get you an apartment, a penthouse. Move on in. They better not say nothing to you. I go upside their head.
Yes, today is a sad day, everybody. The great actor Sherman Hemsley moved on up. He died today in El Paso, Texas, 74. Let me get a little bio of my man. It's funny, it's like I followed his career. I was a little young boy watching Archie Bunker when he made his appearance. Matter of fact, one of the best shows that I saw on All in the Family was a reincarnation of the Martin Luther King riots. And Lionel was snapping off. And Sherman Hemsley and Isabel Sanford, back then Mr. and Mrs. Jefferson, was calming everything down. And at that time, you had Meathead over there. And you had, oh, wow, it was a good scene with Mrs. Bunker, Edith. And she was kind of talking them down and saying how you shouldn't go out there, you might have hurt me and stuff like that. It was really, real touching. Archie Bunker being the racist that he was, and the opposite of Archie Bunker being Mr. Jefferson. You see, George Jefferson to me personified the American dream. You know, here you have a black man in a middle class in a middle class neighborhood. He took his family out the ghetto, moved to a middle class area. Small businessman. I mean, this is the character that they portray. See, back in the 70s, we had certain strong images and characters of how blacks were being portrayed in society. Now, here you have this racist one dude, Archie Bunker, and it's, I'm just coming out the black power movement, this little short, angry black man. But what's different about this angry black man is he has money, not because of anything illegal, because of a small chain of laundromat, which he, as the story goes, built his way up where he can take his family from the little racy class neighborhood he in to a deluxe apartment in the sky. Let me give you a little brief history on him before I take a little break here. In 1973, All in the Family patriarch Archie Bunker met his match, and George Jefferson, who was every bit his equal when it came to being a bigot, rude, and utterly entertaining. That was thanks to the deft comic touch of Broadway and TV veteran Sherman Helmsley, who died today, Tuesday, at 74 at his home in El Paso, Texas. His agent, Todd Frank, at the El Paso Sheriff's Department confirmed. Born in 83, the South Philadelphia native served in the Air Force and paid his way through drama school by working at the post office. He kept that day job even after moving to New York to pursue acting roles. Hemsley was starting in the early 70s musical Pearlie, when All in the Family producer Norman Lear handpicked him to play Bunker's next-door neighbor in working-class Queens, New York. You can say George Jefferson's reputation preceded him. He was mentioned as early as 1971, but family, All in the Family fans, never saw him, the explanation being that he wouldn't even step foot in his racist neighbor's house until Hemsley's, no, that was a sketch. I'm not stepping foot in that little racist neighbor. You just heard him through the door or through the window or what have you, or he's calling Edith in or what have you. Okay. Not Edith, Wheezy in. Now, they kept that up until Hemsley finished his theatrical run and formally joined the cast in 73. After much bickering and name-calling, George loved to call Archie a honky. Now, that was revolutionary at that time. You had a black man on TV calling a white man honky. And that was a disrespectful term. It's like, almost like saying, you know, white man calling a man nigger. It was a very bold move, and it brought ratings up high. Normally, they knew what he was doing. The two men began to change each other's attitude about race, and viewers got to see life from another point of view. George, entrepreneur with his own dry cleaning shop, and wife Wheezy, Isabel Sanford. In 1975, they moved up on the East Side in the spinoff, The Jeffersons. In addition to seeing the affluent black couple in their own, maid, Marla Gibbs, Jefferson fan was introduced to another TV's first, mixed-race couple, Tom and Helen. See, that was the first year had Tom and Helen been the first mixed-racial couple. But another thing people failed to realize about the show, he took his mother with him. See, Mother Jefferson always was a part of the show, always, in the early shows until she passed on. And that was a good episode on the Jeffersons, too, when Mother Jefferson passed on. Because she was so proud of her son, doing all the things she did. And at that time, you know, who could not appreciate the love and caring of a son to a mother. You know, she's tripping on Wheezy's cooking and stuff like that because she's no good, no matter what. She's not that good enough for her son. Okay, now, the Jefferson, oh, that was good. I remember the scene when Mother Jefferson was beating the man off Wheezy when she's trying to get a hold on her and George was about to beat the dude up. But the Jeffersons were excellent. The Jefferson ran for 11 seasons, man. Think about that. It came on like in 1975. And I think 11 seasons, like it went off of like in 1980 to 85, 86, 84, something like that. With the 11 seasons, how seasons run. Jeffers ran for 11 seasons. Garner Helms is an Emmy nomination for lead actor in comedy in 84. He returned to sitcom life 2 years later with NBC's A-Men, which he led an African-American cast as a scheming Philly preacher, Deacon Ernest Fry. When A-Man wrapped up in 91, Hemsley lent his voice to the animated series Dinosaurs. His last gig as a series regular was on UPN Good Behavior, which was canceled after one season in 96. Most of his latest works consisted of guest starring roles, including two, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Tyler Perry House of Pain, in which he reprised the character of George Jefferson. In 1977, the Jeffersons episode titled George's Legacy, the character decided to immortalize himself by hiring a sculptor to create a bust. A man got to leave his mark, George tells the bust, something to prove that he's been there. Otherwise, ain't nothing, ain't no use. There's no use of showing up at all if no one can recognize that you were there. Let me go on ahead and take us out with a... Let me take us out with a little theme song for A-Man. Then we'll come back with a commercial break and relive a couple of more things from... Sherman Hemsley.
I can't sing no more sad songs.
Jimmy want a steak. Jimmy want a piece of your chocolate cake. But more than all that, Jimmy wants a face. So Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got soul. Sooner or later, the time comes around for a man to be a man, take back his sound. I gotta do something to shake things up. I like Johnny Mathis, but I can't do that stuff. But Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got S-O-U-L soul. What I can do, baby, is show my soul. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got soul.
Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network. What's going on, my lady friend, DC Dana? What's happening?
Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
I can't complain. Well, today was morning... the sad day of the passing of Deacon Fry George Jefferson, the great actor Mr. Sherman Hemsley made his transition today.
Oh, wow, I didn't hear about that. I had no idea. That's exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, so we've been talking about, I've been talking about earlier the importance of his role and character really within the black community at that time. You see, during the early 70s, he had two shows, really three shows that Norman Lear produced that had black, really four, you want to count Maude, that had blacks and black spinoff. You had All in the Family, which brought you Archie and Edith. Edith's sister name was Maude. Maude had a housekeeper. Florida Evans, who also married James Evans. But go back to All of the Family, Edith's best friend was Isabel Stanford, a.k.a. Wheezy, whose husband was George Jefferson, who later on went to move to the East Side and become a great black entrepreneur. In California, you even had a little junk man who took a little junk yard and turned it to hotels, the Sanford Arms Hotel, so his son, Damon Sanford, his newly wife, can take over the family business. It was a whole lot about upper mobility when you're showing shows. You show strong male lead role models. Even though George Jefferson had such a foul mouth and he was like the antagonist, and sometimes you cheered his demise, the simple mere fact that he represented a small black man with a small business, his own franchise that generated him enough money where he can get his wife her own non-for-profit foundation, the health center, which he's able to buy his wives diamonds and pearls so she can live off a glorious lifestyle, which is a really happy love story when you look at it in the end. And you can even look at it how he loved his mother and took his mother up with his time. Raising his little son Lionel, either Lionel 1 or Lionel 2, whichever Lionel you like, you know. And even in Jefferson, like I said earlier, brought you the first interracial couple with Tom and Wheezy.
Right, with the daughter.
What made the Jeffersons so taboo and was so risky because they was not afraid to go there. Afraid to go there with the word nigger. Matter of fact, let me play a little clip of him right now. Here's a little skit of George and Wheezy trying to stop Tom and Helen from arguing. And George say you don't argue because you're scared y'all don't call each other by the name. Here we go.
George, why do we have to fight so much? If we have a problem, why can't we just talk it through like Tom and Helen? They don't fight.
They don't fight because they're scared to fight.
What's that supposed to mean? You know damn well what it means. If you two ever really started going at one another, inside of 5 minutes, he'd be calling you...
Don't say it.
Nigga. He said it.
Now, you listen to me. We have had lots of fights, and it's never happened.
Oh, and don't tell me it never crossed your mind.
No more than it ever crossed my mind to say the word hunky to Tom.
Ha! Well, how come you said it just then?
Come on, let's go.
That's the best idea you've had all day.
Yeah, the taboo, cutting edge nature of how he, you know, did his deal and how he was able to cross the line and make the word nigga funny, i.e. Richard Pryor, when that word was still such a taboo. But given in the context, a lot of black folks understood where it was coming from. It was funny how Norman Lear was able to take a word, which had meaning that it had, and use it in a context that black people would just say all day right in front of white folks. It's funny how he took what was taboo to say behind white folks back and put it on TV. But yes, he did made his transition today. My man Sherman Hemsley died today at the age of 74. Do you have any good Jeffersons or George Hemsley or even Amen when he played Deacon Fry? Any memories of my man Sherman Hemsley, Dana?
Well, you know what, Jimmy? I actually enjoyed both of his shows. And I'll tell you what, the biggest thing about George Jefferson was that he was one of those black people that were on the TV when a lot of us couldn't get on there. So that was one of the greatest things, is that he was able to show us and show young black men and black women that, guess what, we can be on TV too, and we can be funny. So I enjoy that.
And we can be rich millionaires. We ain't got to play thugs and hoes and broke people. We can play businessmen with money. And
right.
We can be in a white man's face being bold and proud, like, get out my face, honky.
And you can have your own business. I just think that that he did so much for us in television. So, you know, my condolences to him and his family. I mean, to his family.
Yeah, like I said, his frustration that was allowed to vent on TV was a lot of pent-up frustration that a lot of African-American class had. That's why it was so successful. Even when you had your good times and your Sanford and Son. Even Baby I'm Back when Demond Wilson came off. Even The Grady Show. He would go on all those shows that kept coming on and spinning off. At least black actors were working at that time. Even The Ugly Old Esther, even though you showed the black spirituality side of black evangelism, trying to convert the heathen Fred. Even you saw the version of the extended family, how Fred even stayed in touch with Esther, being only reason, not because Esther was related to him, but Esther was his wife's sister, and he made sure that his son still knew who his family was. That was a small part of Sanford's Son. People didn't really, really peep out in Norman Lear's strategy. It was all based around family. It was never the family ploy you might see in today's family sitcoms, where the father and mother are beefing, and the sons and daughter are beefing, the father and son are beefing, the mother and daughter are beefing, the daughter and the father are trying to get over on each other, and the mother's overloving, embarrassing the son. The thing you see on The Simpsons, what you see on standard op TV. Outside of The Cosby Show, and may I say, the shows that Norman failed did earlier with the African-Americans in there, you never saw dissension. Even as old as Demond Wilson was, even as old as Lamont Sanford was, he never went against his father, no matter how dumb and harebrained his father's schemes were. You know, even those times and good times when J.J. got in trouble, it was nothing for James to grab his belt like, "I'll whoop your ass, sit your butt down." You know, it was a whole, at the early time of the 70s, a great look at black subculture and how we developed. But it's funny how those lessons was passed aside, you know, and not even passed on when the 80s came. If it wasn't for shows like The Cosby Show, you would not look at blacks in a certain light. You feel, did that make sense to you?
It does. Well, I tell you, part of that is because when we started having to have both parents out of the home just for survival's sake, you know, a lot of those morals and values that I grew up with and that some of my friends grew up with back then, they were lost. And it wasn't necessarily because it was the 80s. It was because we didn't have anybody in the home to continue to teach us those things. because, you know, mom was working, dad was working.
Let's look at the 80s. In the 80s, you had two black boys being raised by a white man in different strokes. You had one little short boy being raised by another white man in Webster. You had just a little black friend to hang around a rich white friend in Silver Spoons. You had one black rich girl, whose parents you never saw, hang around a bunch of little rich well-to-do black parents, well, I mean white children, who parents occasionally came in the picture.
That's because back then, I would say that although we were less racially, I think back then, as a people, we were trying to come together. As a people, we were trying to come together, and it wasn't so much about what you looked like. It was more about who you were, and that's what those shows showed us. Those shows showed us that a white family could raise a black kid, and those kids, and they could love them just as much.
I'm not complaining about that. No, that is so true. Even the whole spectrum, even to the I agree with you. Even to the gauntlet of when Robert Guillaume, was a butler in Benson, and then end up getting hired as a help in the governor's kitchen. He rose to the ranks to become lieutenant governor and ended the show running for governor, which just showed you how aspirations black can go. I'm not tripping on that. That is so true. But the point I'm saying, if we go back to the 70s, where you had probably only CBS rocking black shows at that time, like I said, you had your Sanford and the Son, a.k.a. even for a quick time, that little Grady special. When Grady was a spinoff of Sanford and the Son, look at Grady's lifestyle. That was Grady when he raising his daughter, being an old man raising his daughter. Again, still close, tight family netting. And then you want to go off to Good Times, even before James died. You had a close, tight black family setting. Even if you want to go to Jefferson's, even as old as Lionel was, as old as that motherfucker was, he was an old man. They didn't put that nigga out the crib. No, homie, stay with us. We got you family. We family. You ain't got
to
move out. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, portraying the
close
to the family.
Time changed, and I'm not sure at what point they did change, but that just goes to prove to you how times changed. Now, when you look on TV, you don't see these strong family units. You want to see a black successful family, you're looking at the Cosbys that was out back in the 70s.
In
now
the early 80s.
Now thugs, gangsters, shooting each other up, don't have no money, dope dealers. You see what I'm saying? In jail. And so what does that do? What does that do to the image of us as a people?
Well, I can go like this. The last quote-unquote black family show, see, it went on the same model that I said was out there where you have the children and the parents battling each other, but in the end it had a moral justification. And I'm talking about the Bernie Mac show. Well, the Bernie Mac show was not a man raising his family, but a man raising an extension of the family, which made it a stronger family unit show than just these are my kids. And that's the only reason why you will overlook his demeaning comments to those kids, because they ain't his kids. You know, he can say those nephews or dad, you know, not being his kids, and you're getting, and that's where you might get on walking the borderline of that dysfunctional family type. But hey, motherfucker, I'm taking y'all ass in. Be happy I'm taking y'all ass in. I ain't gotta do this shit. So coming in with that attitude,
day,
love.
At the end of the day, even on that show, he showed how much he loved them.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm talking all this shit, but in the end, I love y'all, and whatever y'all want, baby girl, I got for y'all because we're family. In the end, we're family. You know, that was a strong part of the Bernie Mac show that people overlooked. Not that he had took his kids, whatever it is. No, the fact that he said, in the end of the day, like Big Mama say, we're family, and family take care of their own. Not like, RH18, y'all to college, go on, get the fuck on. You know, listen, let me give you an example. Even in Good Times, even though Selma about the Projects got a motherfucker out of college who was about to play football, you know what I'm saying? Her ass in the right back of the spot with a motherfucking family. Even though JJ broke in the mud, almost about to get a gig. And the motherfucker took it to the firm, he realized, no, we got to stay together because, shit, if I leave, the family going to suffer. Once upon a time, I had to trip a lot of these niggas that broke out and leave. But the psychological effect of James being gone, and they thought that if one of them left, one of them would have melted down. Even the role of Michael. If Michael would have left, he had no idea what would have happened. JJ might fall off, and then them might go off. Them, if she left, who going to take care of Michael? Who going to take care of JJ? JJ thought I left, thought about I left. Damn, I'm the oldest man. I got to take care of my family. Even though that was not really showed or pumped up as thoroughly, you can look at that being a psychological reason for why those characters never chose to spin off or go their own ways or even get a motherfucking different apartment in the fucking projects off some old hook and shit. You know, I got another Section 8 number. You know what I'm saying? But that's another story in itself. But, you know, that was during the golden age of African-Americans on TV, you know, and the roles that we played.
You know what, Jimmy? Maybe the biggest tribute that we could play to Sherman Helmsley is that we kind of try to bring those morals and those values back into society, and that we try to allow us to, you know what I mean, to try to allow us to help and make us a better people.
Right, I agree. Well, let me go in there and give this my last little final tribute out to Sherman Helmsley. When I come back, Dana, I should have did a show on the top five all-time favorite TV theme songs. I might do a show on that. But let me go in here and play the best two I say for last. I've been playing all versions of the theme song, the first Sammy Davis Jr. version they had. Long version. Let me play the original version. Here it is, everybody. So don't y'all think I ain't got the original version, and I've been playing some crazy, crappy version. Rest in peace, Sherman Helmsley.
Again.
Yeah, so Dana, what's your top five? I'm going to do a show on it, but what's your top five all time TV songs?
So Good Times, of course. Everyone loves Good Times. Different Strokes. Of course, I love George Jefferson. Who didn't? I also loved the show with all the girls. They were all adopted. You remember? It was Tootie, Dana Delaney.
It was with Abe Bogota. It was a spinoff of Fish. It's called Fish. Todd Bridges on it.
This one was the girls. It was all girls. And
no.
They were adopted, and they lived. There was Joe. There was Tootie.
Different Strokes?
It wasn't Different Strokes. It was a spinoff of Different Strokes.
Well, no, listen. It was Joe. It was Tootie. It was Todd Bridges. It was a fat Italian dude. It was a bunch of kids. They say were Abe Bogota and this little lady. Got them all from like a little home because Fish retired from, I think Fish had retired from Barney Miller. He retired from Barney Miller. They took those kids in. And it was staying in the crib. It was the black young boy was Todd Bridges at that time. This is before Different Strokes that came out. And then after that, he got a gig in Roots, but it was some fat little Italian boy who played at Bugsy Malone. You had some. It was like it was more girls than boys, but you had Joe was in it, and Tootie was in it. You had one black boy, one black girl. You had
And then you had what'd you talk about, Willis?
I ain't talking about Different Strokes. But the show you're talking about was Fish. It was called Fish. The show was called Fish. Okay. Give me. What else will be your top ten? Why I try to look up that
name? Say
it again now.
What was the name of the show with the girls on it, you guys? They don't know, Jimmy. I tried. But you know what I was going to tell you? I think that one of the biggest things that Sherman Helmsley did was I think he helped to break down barriers in society and create a better environment to where it was proven that black people and white people could get along. Because if you think about during that time, there was some problems in the United States. And when shows like those came out, it showed that, hey, guess what? We can all live together and we can all get along.
So look at that one. I think that one says you need one more.
Right. I agree. You know, I agree. But right now, if you like, how you look at it now, how TV is, it's all about how people are going to get over on one another, how you get over on your parents, how your parents are stupid, how your mother don't know what she's talking about, how your father is dumb. No, this is wisdom. It's all about destruction of the family, how that is good.
Right,
you
and
know?
That portrayal is actually destroying families.
I agree. Even in cartoons, all of a sudden, you know, all of that plays a part in everything, and that's the sad part about it. And that's why when you go back to the, I'm trying to get the Fish theme song up, I can't pull up. When you go back to those times, things are not too golden. Let me take a commercial break and I'm bringing my little callers in. Jimmy's Underground Radio, 347-838-9825.
Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe.
Jazz Cafe is one of the main distributors of the Organo Gold Coffee. It gives natural energy delivered right to your doorstep. If you want to order your coffee today, contact Shauna at 601-918-2079 or go to 601jazzcafe.organogold.com. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe.
You need on the Ground Radio Network 347-838-9825. We got you in, call of 216. We got you in, Sean. What's going on?
What's up with you? What's up, Dana?
Hey, Sean. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? Oh, man, I'm upset, man. I just looked on the internet and seen that George Jefferson died, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
I had no idea. Jimmy put me up on it. I didn't know either.
Yeah, we're doing a little, I guess the first hour of the show is dedicated to him, his acting abilities, and the important role that he played in the generation. So most people might look at it satire, him being a bigot or a racist, but coming out of the early 70s, given the rise of black power, he was showing that black Americans can get over in America if they tend to have their own businesses. They ain't got to worry about the white man. They can go ahead and have their own business and work for themselves. He's great. His whole character was far different from the you see now on television.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I agree with you.
Like I said, even we're talking about Norman Lear, even all the TV shows that he had on TV with blacks in them, even the roles that the blacks played were not little Serbian roles. You even go back to Sanford and Son. Like I said earlier in the first hour, Sanford was an entrepreneur. He had an antique shop. People might say the junkyard, but he had an antique shop, and every day he was doing business. People came to his shop every day to buy something.
Didn't he come out first on Archie Bunker?
He came out first on Archie Bunker. But look how the spinoff goes. This is how the spinoff goes. Archie Bunker came out first. Then Archie Bunker's wife, Edith, had a sister. Her sister's name was Maud. Maud had a housekeeper. The housekeeper name was Florida. Right? Florida Everett. Now, Weezy's best friend was named who? Was named Edith. Edith and Weezy's best friend was brought you to Jefferson. Now, that's how deep the whole spinoff truly goes, you know, from that whole little show. I mean, how blacks came out of that little program. Good Times came out of Maud, and Maud was Edith's sister from All in the Family. So, and so Maude would leave, when Florida would leave Maude, she would go to the projects and be with James and them. So that's how all that stuff came in. That's how all that whole little rotation came to a part. And like I said, the underlying theme of all those African Americans on television was strictly the role of family. Like I was saying earlier, no matter how old Lionel was, you know, matter of fact, they had money. They could have gave Lionel his own apartment, his own little crib. They kept Lionel right there with him. Come on, Lionel, we family, man. You can stay right here. You ain't got to go nowhere. That's a family's fault. Family here to take care of you. And then when you look at the Sanford son, not name one of Pop Sanford's harebrained scheme that Lamont not fall in line with. Lamont was down with his father. No matter what stupid stuff his father did, all right, Pop, I'm with you. You know, I'm not going to diss you, Pop, now what have you. When J.J. stepped out of line, James going to whoop his ass. I got a belt, boy. Watch yourself. You know, even the psychological realm of why the brothers and sisters never split up and left each other. Each one of them could have left the family unit, but each one of them felt strong enough that if they'd have left, look, Thelma thought about left, Michael and J.J. survived. In her mind, they dumb. Michael thought, shit, if I leave, these dumb motherfuckers gonna be dumb. JJ thinking, well, shit, these niggas ain't gonna make no goddamn money if I leave. What the fuck? They all really stayed together in that tight-knit ass unit, even though they could get their own apartment, did their own little thing. But the overall underlying theme of the shows was family. Even in the family, Archie took his daughter and his son-in-law in. Come on, man, y'all ain't got to stay here with us, baby girl. No matter how old y'all is, how crazy this man is, dude on the floor, I don't give a fuck. Y'all sleep on my couch because we family and we love you. It ain't like get out in the streets, go somewhere, get on, head on. It was like, come on in, we're family, family take care of each other. You know, and that right now, that theme is not prevalent in today's line of family shows. It's like, y'all get your own, get out the house, leave me alone, get out my business. Ooh, you bother me too much. You know, you got too much rights over me. Just because you're my mom and I don't mean nothing. But back in the day, parents met a whole lot. And even in Lionel never rose up against his father and parents, even though George off the wall a couple of times. You know, whatever you say, Pop, I'm with you, Pop. You know, even when it goes to the spinoff of Grady, if y'all remember Grady, like I said in the last hour, which is spinoff of Sam and his son, he went back to stay with his daughter. You know, see his daughter and his grandchildren, see how they was. Again, family. And it's so Grady out like, you know, daddy, you stank. You, where you coming from, daddy? You a bum? Come on in, Pop. I ain't seen you. There was a show.
Yeah,
I remember.
Called,
Baby, I'm Back. With the mind sister played, some veteran came. I mean, some dude who walked on his family came back to get back with his kids, even though his wife had another cat. But I move upstairs.
Okay.
I don't keep married. I move upstairs just so I can be close to my family. Both the whole underlying theme was family stay together.
So here's my question. Do you feel that the current way that families are portrayed on TV, do you feel that that affects the family structure?
Of course it does, because like I said in the last hour, the same family structure line goes as this. Wife thinks the husband is stupid and impotent. Son thinks your father's ignorant and I can get over on him. Daughter loves the daddy because she thinks the daddy is impotent. Daughter thinks the mama don't know what she's doing and then played herself out because she's married to her daddy. Son thinks my sister is stupid because she's so smart, smarter than me. And there goes the whole dysfunctional family. Everybody just going back and forth to each other because there's no structure. Where the parents like, man, get out of my way. The father over here trying to stay away from the wife over here trying to stay from the father. And they all hate to go out on family outings without yelling or humiliate each other or embarrassing each other because they see nothing more joy and more pleasure than embarrassing one parent. And that is what's prevalent now in today's society, where the humiliating your parents is more funny than watch your parents humiliate themselves. See, that's what the funny thing back in those days, the parents humiliate themselves by their hard-headedness. The child didn't go about the ways setting a little trap for the parent. The child was there to be, yeah, okay, daddy, whatever you say. Now let's go to the 80s. The parents are gone. Like I said, the parents are gone. Webster got a white parent. Willis and Arnold got a white parent. And you never see Tootie's parents. You never see them at all. You know, you never even see Alfonso's parents from Silver Spoon, even though he hang out with his white man father and his friend. You never see his parents at all. Oh, my fault. His parents are the butler, dude. That's right. The yes, sir, man, not no man of extreme stature. In the end, his father works for the boy's best friend. You know, so you have roles portraying non-masculinity males over their children, showing dominance over their child, and you got white people saying they can raise their children better than, not saying that it's wrong anything, but I'm just saying you go from one decade of strong family values to a decade of no parents on TV. You know, even though they tried to match Benson up a couple of times with Arnold to show them in a couple of movies as a black man and a little boy and a couple of hit shows to keep that theme going on, but even in those little 80s theme songs, something was wrong with Robbie Guillaume. He never had his boy. Some of the kids took his kids out of his lifestyle. He's a bum in the baseball field, coaching all this and that. But he's, you know, it was always showing that you can't be with your family or your parents. Something's wrong with your parents. Let government come in and take your kids. Now, in the 90s, the whole deal was the Simpsons. Like I said, that whole role, and the stupid kids run the world.
Well, I agree that all of that is contributing to the demise of our society. If you think about it, when you have, I am a firm believer that people live what they learn. And I'm also a firm believer that when you portray something a certain way, if you portray it that way enough times, then guess what? People start to believe it. And that's why one of my biggest concerns has always been these $200 and $300 gym shoes that are being marketed towards kids that don't have a job. So then when they go out and they conduct legal, have illegal behaviors in order to obtain those things, then guess what? We've kind of made it full cool circle. So in my opinion, it's important that as a society that we kind of bring it back home.
But right now, cartoons are the family shows. The only family shows, the Cleveland Show, The Family Guy, American Dad, The Simpsons. Those are your family shows on television now. Outside of that, your Law and Orders, or My Parents Are Aliens, or The Desperate Housewives, or The Good Christian Wife. I mean, all these, the Bakery characteristics and family values. I mean, talking about on the human level. But on a cartoon level, they're taking it slapstick-wise. Even Bob Burgers. Everything is trying to have cartoons relate to everyday experiences that humans have, and to the point where humans are going to feel that they are. Matter of fact, you got cartoons selling you medicine now on TV. You get cartoons telling you how to invest your money.
I have been watching the cartoons, Jimmy.
I'm just saying, look, you get cartoons saying, oh, wow. If my money market's out of pocket, if I put my money here, it'll be safe. You're a cartoon. You got bees telling you, oh, my nose is infected. Let me sniff something. You're a bee. I'm just saying. You have cartoons telling humans what to take for their illness and ailments. Is what I'm saying. These are not human characters. These are not digital images making people feel that I need this now. I mean, cartoons telling you mouthwash.
Hey, didn't George Jefferson, wasn't he the first one that come up with Hunky on the TV show?
Like I said, that's what I said was so positive about him. Well, not positive about him. How he showed expression during a lot of pent-up frustration. He was also bold to come out saying nigger on television earlier off, too, with the censors not really slapping him that hard. That was revolutionary.
Hey,
also, I played a skit with that on there, matter of fact. Go ahead.
Right. I didn't want to interrupt the flow that you had dealing with George Jefferson, but I seen y'all talked about your boy last night, Zimmerman. I just wanted to comment on that for a minute, but y'all can go back to George.
Okay, let me end this last George Jefferson skit, and we go with that. Well, this is why George Jefferson is revolutionary. I played it earlier. I'll play it again.
To fight so much. If we have a problem, why can't we just talk it through? Like Tom and Helen, they don't fight.
They don't fight because they're scared to fight.
What's that supposed to mean? You know damn well what it means. If you two ever really started going at one another, inside of 5 minutes, he'd be calling you.
Don't say it,
nigga. He said it.
Character. all tight wide, father and his son passing down the business. Same thing as any Jewish couple. You can put George Jefferson Weeds and make them white and look at the same thing, same flow. It would have the same humor, same flow if they were white. But by them being African American, it may even made it more satiristic. You know, he took a pent up page from Broad Vaudeville by having your old Rochester style of humor, by having a black man get the best of white society instead of how Rochester would get the best of what's the dude played Benny Goodman. How Rochester get the best of my man, his butler, his keeper, all the time. It's one line hit. And Rochester was real famous for telling white man, man, you can go ahead on, you old dumb hunky. And then, ah, ha, ha, ha. And white America would laugh at it because how dare this little black man speak out ill to us. And what he did in Sanford, I mean, not only San Francisco, but what he did in the Jeffersons, was just brought that back, but made the man more proud to be reckoned with because he was a self-improved black man. He didn't need no government handout to tell him what to do, and he showed you that you can take an idea, you can get your own job, you can move on up to the east side, the deluxe apartment in the sky. Well, that's all I want to say on that. But go on in. What you want to say about Zimmerman now?
Man, I lost my train of thought listening to you. But
I'm just saying, if you feel me, that's not real how important those little roles and our images play. But if people just pay attention to the satire. And all him saying honky or him going here. Not that the fact that he got a white man coming up begging for a dollar every time you see him. Like, man, give me some money, man. You got money, man. Give me some money, man. You know, man, come on. Or a British neighbor coming to him because he realized, oh, my God, this is a rich nigger. I have a rich nigger neighbor.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this is fascinating. This man has money. He's saying honky. Oh, my God. You know?
Okay.
I mean, the fact that, why is this black man living here? What the fuck is he doing here? You know? Instead
all
of
right.
moving out to the suburbs, he moved up to the east side. Different
ball game. All right. Did y'all see that interview, though?
Yeah, I saw it, and I was playing it yesterday. What's your take on it?
Okay. No, he's guilty, man. That dude has no remorse about any part that happened that night. Is that what you – did you see that?
I gathered the same thing. It's difficult. I cannot even take the opposite side of anybody arguing and argue for him. You know, I can't not argue for him because he said it was in God's will. You know, that part got me. You know, that part of the whole interview got me. And the funny part is how John Hannity made it sound so tantalizing, you know what I'm saying? Sound so... Matter of fact, let me play a clip right now from it.
There's one report, or a police report, that actually said you didn't know after you fired, you didn't think, you thought you missed?
Yeah, I didn't think I hit him, yes.
Yeah. So what happened immediately after the shooting then, George? I understand one guy came out, he said he had a flashlight, that he spoke to you, and you said to call your wife, tell her what happened, that I shot somebody. Do you remember that conversation?
The conversation I had with the gentleman, or?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You do remember that conversation. And he did talk about it, and his suggestion was is that you were very matter-of-fact about it. Do you remember what you said to him? Do you think you were in a state of shock? Did you know that Trayvon, when did you know that Trayvon had died?
When I went, probably about an hour after I got to the police station.
After the shooting, you saw that he was laying there and obviously injured, there was a moment where you realized that he was shot.
Like I said, he sat up and he said something to the effect of, you got it or you got me. I assumed he meant, okay, you got the gun, I didn't get it. I'm not going to fight anymore. At which point, I got out from under him.
Is there anything you regret? Do you regret getting out of the car to follow Trayvon that night?
No, sir.
Do you regret that you had a gun that night?
No, sir.
Do you feel you wouldn't be here for this interview if you didn't have that gun?
No, sir.
You feel you would not be here?
I feel that it was all God's plan, and for me to second guess it or judge it.
Is there anything you might do differently in retrospect now that time has passed a little bit?
No, sir.
You know, a detective said, you know, that you had, Detective Singleton said, he quoted you saying, the bad guys always get away. Did you have, you said, also said that in the 911 tape. Did you have a feeling that there were a lot of people that do get away with crimes? In other words, were you sort of predisposed in your mind in some way to think that criminals get away too often?
Not in general. I think in our neighborhood, there's geographic advantages for burglaries.
Do you have any idea, why do you think Trayvon would have confronted you the way he did? I made a comment on the air one day, and I got beaten up pretty bad for saying this could have all just been a terrible misunderstanding or a mistake. Do you think maybe, is there any possibility he thought you were after him and you thought he was after you and there was some misunderstanding in any way?
I've wrestled with that for a long time, but I can't. One of my biggest issues through this ordeal has been the media conjecture, and I can't assume or make believe.
The parents of Trayvon Martin, they lost their son. This is your first interview. What would you like to tell them?
I would tell them that, again, I'm sorry. I don't have, my wife and I don't have any children. I have nephews that I love more than life. I love them more than myself. And I know when they were born, it was a different, unique bond and love that I have with them. And I love my children even though they aren't born yet. And I am sorry that they buried their child. I can't imagine what it must feel like. And I pray for them daily.
Would you like to talk to them at some point?
I'm certainly open to it.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Man, that bastard, man. Oh, man, that just pissed me off, man. That just, my temperature rose, man. You know, he had no feelings. Like you said, he don't regret nothing he did that night. Nothing.
Yeah, that. And
you know, that's
what.
That dude is. There's no other word, there's no other name to call him other than idiot.
I don't know about saying idiot, but I'm going to go ahead and say here. He's on the street. He made that interview. Where is the outrage now? Where is the protest?
Well, I did read the internet the next day that the prosecutors are going to use that tape against him in court. Okay, because he said...
His interview just proved that there is such a huge disparity in America when it comes to some and the punishment they receive for crimes that they commit.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that that proves. It proves that this dude killed his boy in cold blood, and he still doesn't even have enough compassion to retract the fact that he did it. And we're going on national TV and say, in essence, is bragging about what he did. Yeah, he said that he has no regrets. And to have the audacity to pretend like Trayvon was sitting there threatening him makes his act even more incredulous and more makes him more heinous. Egregious. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, this guy instigated the whole thing. He followed Trayvon. Trayvon stood his ground, and he was killed for it. And this guy is basically saying that was okay.
And he's pretending like he was threatening him with a can of tea and a bag of Skittles. That, to me, is just incredible.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Now, I just wanted to comment on that. Because when I seen it, was that Thursday?
Yeah.
I was furious, man.
Like I said, my deal is no. Where's the outrage? Where are
all the people who was upset that he got out on bail and they should
well,
be locked up. And that he got
upset,
locked up.
Now you got to let the law do what it's supposed to do.
Right.
That's
okay.
The law did it earlier. The only difference between now and then was he only stayed a couple of more days. Let's say instead of staying a couple of hours, he just stayed 30-some days and came back out. And matter of fact, it was safer for him to be in jail than on the streets. The safest place for him to be was in jail, so everybody forgot about it. So he was it was better for him to be locked up than to be free. So what we did was we did him a favor by locking his ass up. Really. We saved his life by doing that. So now that justice has been served, we took the heat off him. Now everyone has forgotten about it. That's all I'm saying.
Ain't nobody forgot about it, Jimmy. Ain't nobody forgot about it.
Where's
just
outrage?
Just gonna wait to the court day. I mean, what can you do? You can't.
That was my argument in the beginning. But no, that was my argument in the beginning, man. I mean, he got a court date coming up before. He had a court date coming up before.
I'm going to be honest with you. I think he's going on TV doing these interviews just so that he can taint the jury so that he can always holler, I can't get a fair trial.
Okay, let me deal with that on the bottom half of the hour. Last half of the hour was brought to you by Organo Gold, ladies and gentlemen, Organo Gold.
Hey, well, look, I'm gonna have to talk to y'all later on this, but y'all have a nice night.
Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. The Jazz Cafe is one of the main distributors of the Organo Gold coffee. It gives natural energy delivered right to your doorstep. If you want to order your coffee today, contact Shauna at 601-918-2079 or go to 601jazzcafe.organogold.com. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your latte at the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. At the Jazz Cafe. Got your black coffee at the Jazz Cafe. Got your mocha at the Jazz Cafe. Got your
347-838-9825. If you will, Dennis, last 30 minutes, why don't you humor me for a second? I wanted to finish the topic we started yesterday about Barack Obama polarizing America, and you were saying how it is Mitt Romney, the one that is making America more polarized. When I had, go ahead.
President Obama isn't polarizing America. What's happening to America is, in order for Mitt Romney to win this election, he has to create a divide, a division. But I tell you what, I'm afraid that the division that is happening to us as American citizens, we're going to have a hard time coming back from. We're moving in a backwards direction. The president should not be judged based on the color of his skin. He should be judged on, is he capable and is he the right man for the job? And President Obama has proven to us time and time again that he's that man. So to try to pretend that he's polarizing the country, he's not bringing something out that's not already there. The problem is that if we keep moving in that direction, we're going to be in a bad place as citizens. We're going to be in a bad place as a country. And it's sad that we can't get past the color of someone's skin in the year 2012.
Yeah. You still there?
I'm here.
Oh, no. Hold on. You ended it like that? I thought you were going to have a big broom bing with it. But no, Obama also said last stump speech he was at that this election is like his term limit. Give me one more time, and then y'all can throw me up out of here. No, this is why I say he's polarizing. And it's difficult for people to say that the Republicans are polarizing. It's that simple fact of the matter is, if the universe was all white, one big white canvas, it'd be bland. But if you add one little dot upon that white canvas, just one speck, that black dot will stand out. That black dot will become polarizing. Now, the reason why I say Barack Obama is polarizing because, for lack of a better word, he's that black dot. Everyone can see him. Everybody sees him. He's like the emperor with no clothes. Everybody sees you. He can't hide. So when you can't hide, and everyone can see you, then you polarized already. Now, the reason why I say Mitt Romney, nah, he's too bland. He can't be polarizing. He has not even the language to even rise up to strike controversy. He's too clean. He can't put his foot on his mouth to make the tide turn, even have a gap. If you think about it, from all the presidential campaigns that you probably followed or paid attention to, around this time, the opposition, be it John McCain, John Kerry, Howard Dean, Al Gore, there's always, there's always something, George H. Bush, there's always something, Jimmy Carter, things that Spiro Agnew make people look at them differently, like, oh, man, this dude said this. Oh, man, that dude did that. Oh, man, do you believe what this person said? Or even the presidents that ran against those people I just mentioned was the losers in the last elections that I mentioned. But even the people that ran against them even had moments of gap. Reagan had them. Carter had them. Clinton had them. Bush had them. Obama had him with Reverend Wright. But in this election, Mitt Romney cannot even rise to the point of controversy. He can't even, you can't even generate controversy over Swiss bank accounts, Dana. I mean, that's a big controversy and a big scandal. It should be beaten down the wind. You can't even generate controversy over it.
That's because he refuses to give up the information. See, when President Obama when President Obama did not show his birth certificate to prove that where he was born, of all things, to prove where he was born, then Donald Trump was all over the TV. Newt Gingrich was all over the TV. They even called him a terrorist. After he proved where he was born, then his education was attacked. And it wasn't good enough that he even showed his degree. They wanted to see the transcript from college. As if that mattered for a president. The reason why the controversy, see, you got to remember now, Mitt Romney is being backed by some big dollars. He ain't out here hustling. He's not hustling. He got, other than, in addition to the large pockets he's got, he's got big backers like Donald Trump, Newt Gingrich, all those folks. So he don't have to share anything. And he's not sharing because he knows if he does, the truth will be out there.
If
it was said that Jesse Jackson Jr. should divulge his personal health information while he's sick, why wouldn't the person that's running for president of the United States divulge his tax record?
You know something?
Why would he go 1 year?
Because, Dana, it's a trick. It's a manufactured scandal because Mitt Romney can be in a position to say this: I'm not going to show my records unless you show me those records. It's all a chicken and a rye type of a standstill. And you're correct. You see, you can hide behind your HIPAA terminology. HIPAA, but Dr. can't talk about it, so I'm not going to talk about it in the discussion. Nobody ain't tripping about you. Dr. can't talk about it. People are wondering why you can't talk about it, Jesse Jr. And people feel that if they love you and believe in you, they still have your back. And you should never be ashamed of your supporters. If your supporters support you, they always support you.
Well,
you can't.
Mitt Romney's got divulging, so why should Jesse Jackson Jr.? Here's the protected health information. And it's more important.
But Dana, no one cares about today, Dana. Nobody cares if Mitt Romney.
We're talking about bank accounts. And offshore.
That's not even a scandal, Dana. It's not a scandal. Let Mitt Romney not showing his tax documents. That's what I'm trying to say earlier, Dana. It don't merit even the level of scandal. Mitt Romney is so bland that he cannot even generate negative press, the scandal-like press, to keep them, like, when Barack Obama, listen, like, let me give you an example. Every time, sometimes by putting your foot in your mouth, what that does for your campaign is bring the media to your campaign. And for maybe 2 to 3 media cycles, how long the story runs, you got that attention. Those are free commercial slots. Sometimes, like the Reverend Wright, Barack Obama rolled that out. He could have made that speech a long time ago, but he rolled it all out. Why? Free airtime, free TV time. The more they talk about me, the less time they talk about Hillary, or the less time they talk about John McCain. You see, but the point I'm saying is Mitt Romney cannot even garner that much infamy or that much scrutiny. It's August. Listen, Dana, it's August. Even though it's July, it's August, Dana. The election has been going on for about a minute now. When is the election going to kick in?
Or,
I mean, do you feel up in D.C.? You're in D.C., Dana. Do you feel like there's an election going on in D.C.? I'm in Chicago. There's not even a commercial running here on TV. In Chicago, there's no presidential election not even happening. There's no Romney commercials. Romney ain't coming to campaign down here. Obama ain't coming to campaign down here. So ain't no election going on. It's all about, you know, who's going to get their people out. And like I said, Obama going to win. Romney's boring. He's the Jimmy Carter against Ronald Reagan. He is who Jimmy Carter. He is the image of what they said Jimmy Carter was when Jimmy Carter went up against Ronald Reagan. He has no pizzazz. He has no ideas. You see what people are saying here in the GOP circle, some of my closest friends, my GOP friends, they are saying to Mitt Romney, hey, homie, the ones that are backing him, the ones giving him money, listen, give your ideas. Give your plans. Say what you'll do. See, you can't be president just attacking Obama. They said the same thing to John Kerry. They told Kerry, yo, Kerry, George Bush got us into Iraq and Afghanistan war. The deficit's up. He ain't caught Osama bin Laden. He ain't caught the man that took 9/11 down. You still can't beat this guy? Why? Because you can't even put your foot in your mouth. And then you wouldn't, what you say, they call you a flip-flopper, that sets you down. I mean, he's running a John Kerry type of campaign. Easy going, all smooth. I mean, that's the campaign Mitt Romney's running. I mean, yeah, it'd be great for him to get Condoleezza Rice on the ticket. Then that'd be a great shakeup. It'd be a better shakeup than Sarah Palin. But then, I'm glad she decided not to, because it would sadden my heart to watch how all the blacks would just pile up on her about 9/11 and make it seem like she was the one behind it when no one said anything to Wolfowitz, Karl Rove, and Cheney, and they walking around right now, even George W., but how the Democrats would have jumped on her for being that way, but saying, oh, the country got attacked on your watch, or this and that, that and the other. So I'm glad she didn't take, I'm glad she did took the time off and going to sit back and wait to 2016. Come on, Condi, 2016. But the point I'm saying is Mitt Romney cannot even garner enough negative press to make the media get him. I mean, you got Barack Obama out in the rain campaigning. You got Barack Obama shutting up, everybody's shutting down right now for the massacre that's going on in Oklahoma, in Colorado. Yeah, that's sad, but shit, 45 people got shot last week in Chicago. Watch a load of flags for them cats right now. Some crazy kids driving by shooting. I mean, death is death, and every life is valuable, and every life should be cherished. We all children of the divine, and we all have his divine spark. We all brotherhood in the eyes of the Creator. All life is precious life, you know. But even using this Colorado as a time to humanize himself, the polls say that right now, if Mitt Romney was had 51% of the popular vote and Barack Obama get 49% of the popular vote, Barack Obama would still win. We're going to have a Florida type of thing again if the blacks will come out to vote. But if the blacks come out to vote, we're going to have a Ronald Reagan type of an event where Mitt Romney's going to get smashed. And I see either or. I see it going to the Supreme Court like George Bush or Mitt Romney getting smashed. So right now, I'm looking at it going to the books because he got more electoral votes right now already in the pocket if the election were to be started today. But let's say he go to Ronald Reagan route and want to smash Mitt Romney. The only reason he can smash Mitt Romney is if he comes up with the greatest October surprise, which I hear in my circles, which he is rumored to be doing. And I hope because I'm standing on the air, he might stop it. But Barack Obama in October is going to legalize marijuana. And when he does that, that is going to get all the potheads on the couch, all the deadbeats, all the people who never took part in voting before in their life or in a while are going to get registered in the vote because they think at this one time they got a chance to get what they've been legalized, want to get legalized for a long time. And then that's going to start a counterculture war. Then you're going to have Mitt Romney, who's just a couple of age older than Obama, going to come out looking like a corny square like time has changed. And then you're going to have the new age battle. I mean, the stage is set. No matter how the table is put down, Mitt Romney does not come out good no matter what the outcome is. You know, the best thing Mitt Romney can do is make himself look good, and after the election's over, people still look at him as a good, credible statesman. Oh, I thought you wanted to say something.
No.
Yeah.
But when they come out to vote, I don't think it has anything to do with the legalization of marijuana. I think it has everything.
Oh, Dana, no, Dana. Listen to why I say that. Dana, let me tell you why I say that. Now, there's a population of America who's not registered to vote, or is not going to vote at all. And those are stoner population. They're not going to get off the couch. Now, they're about 1 million votes deep of legal age. Now, to somehow motivate them, because you got your blacks, you got your Hispanics, everybody right now is in their corner. Everybody right now, you can't win converts over. No one right now is going to win converts over. If you're Republican, you want to vote for Obama, you ain't going to say shit. You want to just keep your mouth shut. If you're Democrat and you're going to vote for Romney, you ain't going to say nothing. You're going to keep your mouth shut. Everybody is in their corner right now. Like I said earlier, if it goes down to the popular vote, a lot of niggas might sell Barack Obama out because they think he might have it in because they don't see Romney not really winning. And the votes people don't get motivated enough to go out in the polls. It's going to be tight. But given how the Electoral College split votes, California, Texas, New York, I mean, he's done. One, locked up, Arizona, I got you. I got five states. I went five, six states. I don't win it all. End of the game. So he really ain't got to go everywhere. That's why he's not coming to Illinois. That's why he might even go to Michigan. You know, certain states he's going to bypass. And the only way to get those people that he's bypassing up to feel that I got to get out and make sure this man get in is to put down they got this illegal-ass drug out here turning people to zombies. I'm about to legalize it, I'm about to tax it, I'm going to bring our comedy back. I'm going to start using hemp for a whole brand new industry. We're going to bring back the rope, paper, soap, clothing, all the industries that hemp can provide for you, and that's going to bring back the economy right there, and it's going to open up a brand new commodities market on the stock market. But with that, all that being said, the people are going to be motivated to get off the benches at 18 years old, the 25-year-old, the Stone Age person from the 1970s. I mean, you know what I'm saying, the flower children, all those people right there. I mean, everybody, the Green Party going to flip over. I mean, all the hemp party, people who've been trying to get stuff legalized for years and years and years, they're going to rally their troops. Democrat, Republican, Independent, they're going to rally their troops to make sure that old boy gets elected because that's a cause that we've been trying to push for years. And all people need is a cause. He's not going to say reparations. He's not going to say give the black Indians what they just deserve. He's not going to say give Tulsa, Oklahoma victims to survive all the money they deserve. And so he has no is on. But he has every call to rally the fringe voters. And I'm calling them fringe voters because pay attention to politics. They're the voters that don't pay attention to all the politics. They're the fringe people. And that's what he's going to use to legalize them, I mean, to mobilize them to get them out. And that's why I say that.
But I would hope that the people go out and vote because he's handling his business and he's doing the right thing. And he's proven that he can run this country.
But Dana, what if somebody hear you say that, like, yeah, you're right? But Dana, what if somebody hear you say, yeah, you're right? And think that was shit, he got it, because everybody's thinking like you. So I ain't got to go up and vote, because everybody feels like Dana's shit. So my vote ain't going to count.
Right, and that's what happens when the elections come. And that's the sad
right.
thing that causes
that's
elections.
That's what I'm trying to say, Dana. Given that, I'm saying, I'm being a political strategist. Given that scenario that I just gave you, that all African-Americans, or let's say 85% of African-Americans feel like you just felt right there. Out of 85%, 15 to 20 and they're going to be like, man, well, he got it. He don't need my vote. Everybody feel like I feel. They don't go out there and vote for him, so I can just stay home. I can forget. So in order to compensate for those people who want to stay home, you have to find a brand new base to get them motivated to come out of all different ethnic backgrounds. Obama already conceded that he's not going to go after the working white class. So and the working white class came out in droves for him last time. So in order to fill that gap of the working white class that he's not going to get and to fill the gap of the 15 to 20% of blacks that might not come out, you need something big and bad. Every year in an election, there's something called the October surprise. Just when you thought the incumbent was about to lose, an October surprise come up and which swings the polls, which swings the tolls. George Bush said it might be a terror attack. Everybody gets scared. We got to keep in office. Or Ronald Reagan said, we're about to tear down the wall, something big. Oh, we got to keep in because we got to do this. Or Bill Clinton said, we got Somalia right now. We got something real big. There's normally a conflict come in October, or so a tragedy comes in October where the events normally swings to the incumbent way, or it helps the challenger to ride that surprise. Matter of fact, the October surprise that came during the last election was the economy went in free fall, and the way John McCain handled it was amateurish, and Barack Obama rode the crisis to the hilt, and that made him look like he knew what he's doing in all the eyes of the fringe voters and the working class whites, because John McCain showed, I can't do it, I can't handle it. And that showed fear in the eyes of the white voters because they didn't want to have that guy behind the button who can't think on his feet at that time. So there's always an October surprise to make the voters go your way. But like I said again, like, there's nothing I can say to you, Dana, that can make you not vote for Barack Obama. Period. And
right,
America knows that. There's no words, there's nothing. Even if you didn't even know the issues, Dana, you can find somebody right down the street who don't even follow politics, who don't even know about Damascus, Syria, Mogadishu, Federal Reserve, deficits, recession. Who don't know none of that. They just gonna vote for Obama because he's black. Off top.
Yeah, I disagree. It's about what he's done and how he's making strides across this country. See, to
Dana,
pretend that he's about,
hey, Dana, because Dana, the next man can come in and do the same damn thing Barack Obama doing because the paper's on the table. I mean,
you're taking a chance and guessing, saying that the next man could come in here and take and do what he's doing. You don't know that. What I'm saying to you
is, what has he done different than any other president?
He went after Ben Martin. He got him. He wanted to turn this housing market around. He did it. He has made strides all throughout this country. He said he's going to turn the economy around. He's doing it.
And that's why people are going to vote for him, because of those reasons only, not because he's black.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dana,
you have friends,
you, Dana, you're around friends right now. My last little 9 minutes before you go on your little tirade. You take a poll, everybody around you black right now, Dana. Are you around a lot of black folks right now, Dana?
Okay, I got some black people around me right now. Excuse me. Black lady in the red shirt, would you vote for President Obama?
Yes, I would.
Would you vote for him because he's black?
No.
Why would you vote for him?
Why not?
It's you.
Why not?
What he's done, his track record.
Did you support Hillary Clinton? In the last election, did you support Hillary Clinton?
Did you hear what she said, Jimmy? She said to
her,
Dana. He's not truly black. That's what she said.
Dana, because she heard you on the tirade. I would like to know this. For Hillary Clinton in the last election.
Again?
Ask her, did she think Hillary Clinton was going to beat Barack Obama in the last primary?
No, I did not.
Why?
Because his views were stronger. He had a stronger
argument. No, because you thought the black man was going to win because he was black. Because he was black.
Nope.
Now you can say that. Now you can say, I got seven minutes.
She does not consider him to be black. So you can't change her. How are you going to change her view?
Dana, I ain't changing the view right now, Dana. I got 7 minutes. I'm trying to give you your cut off. I want to go in depth.
You're not listening. You want to talk, but you don't want to listen.
I know you're on the phone.
He's not even black. His mother is white. It's nothing to do with color. Color has nothing to do with it.
When you see Barack Obama, you see a white man.
It's not a black and white issue for me.
No, when you see Barack Obama, you see a white man. When you see Barack Obama, do you see a white man?
I agree with you.
When you see Barack Obama, you see his white father, you see his white mother. When I see Barack Obama, I see black denied.
I voted for people who are not black. So color is not an issue.
Most black folks do that. Majority of black America do that. I mean, that's nothing new.
I'm not a majority of black Americans.
Did you support Jesse Jackson?
I'm speaking to
you. Did you support Jesse Jackson?
You ran
88. Did you support Jesse Jackson in 88?
What you're saying is, just rhetoric.
Did you support Jesse Jackson in 88? No, did you support Jesse in 88?
14 years ago.
No. No, I'm saying he's a Democrat. No. Okay, Dana. I'll leave that alone. Okay.
She said no, she didn't vote for him in
88. That shows her pattern. That's all I want to know. Now I understand. I can understand her reason now for her answer. I understand the reason for her answer. Now she may think that might be negative, but no, because if she can say what she said now, but no, I ain't gonna vote Barack Obama because he's black. Probably said I didn't vote for Jesse Jackson because he was black also. Because a lot of people didn't vote for Jesse Jackson because he's black. A lot of folks thought back in 88 when he ran and when he supposed to run in 92, but Bill Clinton stopped from running in 92. And everybody thought he was going to be Dukakis vice president. A lot of people went that route in 88 to the same argument that we're having right now. See, the argument's not old. It's not an old argument. It's not a new argument, rather. It's an old argument. But I would just want to, you know, because, no, I don't judge Barack Obama on race alone. I judge him on performance. Like I said, you know, I got him in the Senate, and I supported him when he doing his first run wholeheartedly when everybody was running with Hillary Clinton. So the point I'm going at, I did wholeheartedly because he's black.
I knew a black man can do the job.
Like I knew Condoleezza Rice can do her job. Like I knew Colin Powell can do his job. Like I knew every black that he put in a certain position can do their job. That black people can perform at a certain plateau. So my whole deal was proving to the world that a black man can do it. So yeah, I went that route. And yeah, I wrote with Jesse Jackson. But a lot of people don't go on that a black man can succeed and race through things. But I got 4 minutes, Dana. So if you can say your little goodbyes, I can end my show with my little salute to George Jefferson.
Suddenly, the amnesia went born and changed the country.
Say it again, mommy. I didn't hear you, lady.
We have suddenly short-term memory. Because look what Cheney and Bush did to America for 8 years. I know Barack Obama, he came into presidency.
You could be correct in that, but I'll say this, that when Bush and Cheney was in office, you can argue over 9/11, you can argue over Iraq, you can argue over Afghanistan, but you can't argue that a lot of people made a whole lot of money off property, a lot of black folks sure was rich. There was a whole lot of money floating around that time. You can't argue that.
That happened on his watch, so he was forced to.
You can say again. I can see that argument.
And even when he was called upon to respond, he still didn't do it expeditiously. Are you kidding me? That man shot up that theater in Colorado, and the president was on the TV giving an address to that state.
Just like Bill Clinton was on TV during the Trish Coat Mafia. You say the same thing. You can say the same thing about Bill Clinton. Dan, you can say the same thing about when Bill Clinton was on TV when those kids got shot in Oklahoma. He was right there. I mean, in Colorado, Trish Coat Mafia. You can say the same thing. I mean, you can say the same thing over and over again. I mean, Dana, you see, listen. Dana.
But I tell you what, President Obama has proven that he deserves to be the president of this.
Dan, I blue-roomed you. Now, while you ranting, I'm going to let you blue-room and rant. Now, I guess that was your 2 minutes. I'm in my show like I want to end it. The point I was trying to say, I'll give you Iraq. I'll give you Afghanistan. I'll give you the auto bailout. I'll give you the recession. I'll give you Medicare Part D. I can go on a whole list of things that I can give you that y'all ain't going to even argue about. But what y'all cannot argue about is that there was a lot of money being made in the appraisal, in the real estate game, in the housing market, and a lot of African Americans. A lot of African Americans took that whole little money and did a whole lot. Matter of fact, they went out like the Jeffersons.
Well, we're moving on now.
Good night. and may your God be with you.
Well, we're moving on now.
Oh, and I'd like to thank the ladies from D.C. who didn't vote for Jesse Jackson because he was black and going to vote for Barack Obama not because he's black.
All right, Dana, good night.
Good night,
Jimmy.